So these last several days I've been down into Spirit Rock with Ajahn Jamnian, and having the chance to translate for him, and of course listening to some of the teachings he's given. And I mean, it's interesting. This year, he's really trying to get people to be practicing more, and he's teaching somewhat less. I mean, it's still a lot, but it's it's certainly less than previous years. And they're really encouraging people to practice, to train, to develop the different aspects of the let's say the teachings. And in particular, I mean, he always puts a lot of emphasis on the cultivations of mindfulness. But you know, just that sense of how we do have to put effort into the practice, and it's the practice that is, you know, our understanding can only come from the practice itself. It's not through listening to somebody else or hearing it from somebody else that we're going to be able to understand or to have the inner qualities which are going to make us peaceful, free us from suffering. So the there was one day in the question and answer session, somebody asked him if he, or they made the observation that he had this very sweet temperament, this quality of loving kindness, and asked him if, say, in the light of practicing training, I mean, did he you know, did he develop that, or was he always like that? Was he, you know, did he? And of course, he kind of laughed and said, you know, that isn't you know, it's definitely a result of a practice, a result of training, and that all of the, say, the qualities or the aspects of the Buddha's teachings are things that we have to train in. It's just we can't think that you know, one is to sort of be dismissed. The necessity of practice just because, people are born like that. And, you know, I wasn't born like that, so I'll never be able to cultivate it. I'll never be able to do it. And, or, you know, that's the main thing. So often we discount or discredit ourselves before we even start. And but then he started telling us about how he started developing the qualities of loving kindness as a part of his growing up, and he said that he started developing loving kindness when he was 8 years old, as a kind of a practice, and he was it was his grandfather who started teaching. His grandfather was very his grandfather was blind and was very even tempered and practiced Dhamma a lot, and was you know, people respected him, people loved him, and so he wanted to he asked his grandfather, you know, how he could be like that, and could he and he thought it was because of you know, some sort of a practice or having the some sort of, and also his grandfather was he had these certain abilities, like centipedes wouldn't bite him, snakes wouldn't bite him, and you know, and that seemed pretty cool. Yeah, that was really interesting. So he wanted to know the mantras, you know, how he could develop the, you know, do the recitations, develop the mantras, and in order to have that sort of power with, and of that comes from let's say the loving kindness, metta. And his grandfather said, "Ah, I mean, you can't. There's no point in you doing this, because, you know, you get angry too often. You get upset too often." And he said, "Well, but I really want it." And he said, "You know, well, you've got to. You know, I can't give you the mantras if you're going to be getting upset and angry." And so then he started. So he made that resolution, determination in order to accept the mantras from his grandfather, then he you know, had to be committed to not getting angry and upset, and so he so then his grandfather agreed to give him the mantras that he could then start to recite, so that he could get these, say, develop these power, or have this power. And and the mantra that he gave him was very simple, and he said, and he had to keep reciting that as often as he could. And it was like, "O pu ying, a pu chai, metta pu to." And it's and basically it was while he was reciting this, then his grandfather taught him to the reflecting on pu ying is females, pu chai are males, and to look on all males as one's father and all females as one's mother, so that one's looking and cultivating that perception that one is surrounded by those people who one loves and respects the most. And then metta buddho, loving kindness of the Buddha. To turn the heart to this expansive, unlimited loving kindness of the Buddha. So that's just reciting the mantra, but cultivating and reflecting on that, those qualities. And but an 8 year old, as an 8 year old, I mean, what he's, you know, he's thinking that all the power is coming from the mantra, and that he needs to keep reciting the mantra. And his grandfather is, I mean, he's not contradicting that, but he's sort of planting these seeds of developing to reflecting and those perceptions of recollection of seeing everybody around us as somebody who is worthy of our love and respect, and then developing that universal loving kindness. And then his grandfather would question him every day of how many times did you get angry today? Who did you get angry with? Did you get angry at people? Did you get angry at animals or other beings? And he would, so each day he was having to recollect that quality of anger and being upset at things. And then his grandfather said, okay, you got angry? Did you say anything? Did you do anything? And of course he said, well, if you didn't act on it or didn't say anything, he said, well, that's fine and good. I mean, that's okay. That's within the bounds. You just keep trying to purify, but keep restraint. He said, and then, but if he said anything or reacted to somebody, then what he started to do, what he started to have him do, he said, okay, if you've done said something or acted out of anger, then there's sort of a counter mantra, and the counter mantra was I can't remember exactly what it was in Pali, but it was ahosi, which means forgiveness, and something ahosi. And he said, then you have to ask for forgiveness, and you say the mantra, and then you come up to them and ask for forgiveness, and it's sort of, that's the counter mantra. So you've got him training to be asking for forgiveness all the time for whenever he was, and of course, he was this 8-year-old kid wanting to get the most sort of power out of his mantra, and so he's, every time he had he did act out of anger or got caught in anger or did certain things, he would be very quick to go back and either at that time or to go back and ask for forgiveness and be willing to have that quality of humility as well, that is willing to recognize one's mistakes and ask for forgiveness. And so that he got to be known as somebody who was really of amenable behavior and conduct, and of course people loved him, liked him, and because of that. But he thought it was the mantra was really working. So he was continued to be diligent in reciting this mantra all as much as he could. But his grandfather had him training in developing the qualities of respect and humility and forgiveness and then that perception of spreading kindness wherever he went, and as he got a bit older, then he had him training to go to places where he was afraid or doing things that he was afraid of doing, using the power of the mantra and the power of the loving kindness meditation and the mantra, the loving kindness mantra, to protect him So he had him training to go, when he was very young, he was 10 years old, he was going into charnel grounds and spending the night on his own to get over the fear. But it wasn't consciously or clearly getting over the fear. He was using the loving kindness to tame the ghosts, or using his loving kindness mantra to sort of tame the ghosts, or to be able to go into these places. And so, but all this time he's cultivating the loving kindness internally. So he was saying, you know, this can be cultivated, and he said, you're developing these qualities of kind of fearlessness, courageousness, a willingness to train. And so he developed that from a very young age. And he was encouraging all of us to take that training and be willing to train with things, and be willing to recognize the power of training. He didn't recognize it because he was just trying to get the mantra to sort of work on his behalf and to sort of gain the power from that mantra. But he said that, you know, that isn't in reality what was actually working. It was those cultivations of wholesome qualities. And you know, as he continued to grow up and his you know, seeking advice from his grandfather on how to perfect the mantra and to get, you know, say, to gain more powers of strength from the mantras, and his grandfather would what did he do? He did something that you know, something happened, and then his grandfather instructed him to do was to in order to sort of gain the power of the mantra back, then what he needed to do was to be going and helping like when people were going to the monastery on the observance days or on the days, then to, you know, go out and help them to carry the things to the monastery. It's like you, and oftentimes when people, particularly the women, older women would be going to the monastery, they'd have these food carrying things that they're bringing offerings to the monastery, and then if they're going to spend the day at the monastery, they usually have a little basket with a thing of water for drinking and their betel nut for chewing during the day, and you know, so carry the basket to the monastery. So he's going up and asking the people to help carry him things into the monastery, and he's reciting his mantra the whole time, but of course he's developing these qualities of helping and generosity, kindness, and it's becoming part of his nature. It's just is really seeping into his character. And there was a time when there was a gang of bandits in the area that were you know, well known and feared, you know, and he was afraid of them, just as everybody else was. But he started going to visit them, and his grandfather encouraged him to go and visit them, to get over your fear. Those are human beings, and you know, use that mantra to go to visit them and speak with them, and of course I imagine one of the things that he was gifted with from the time he was born was the ability to chat and talk. And he just start talking with the, just go up and started talking with the this particularly chose the one of the head bandits and started asking him, how is it that you can go and be so fearless, I'd like to know how you can go into other villages and just go and steal from other people and not feel fear and be so unconcerned. And he said, because I'd really like to understand and know that and just developing a rapport with them. And after time, they'd start inviting him to have a meal with them. So he's got to be familiar with the bandits and knowing how the bandits sort of function and work, and just having loving kindness and sort of seeing, oh, they're human beings as well. They're not some horrible monsters that you can't go close to. And in the same way as what he thought were ghosts and evil spirits and these are natural phenomena in the world, and if we are able to approach the world around us, other human beings or things we can see, we can't see, if we approach them with an openness and a sense of kindness, we can go anywhere. And that's actually one of the or a couple of the benefits that the Buddha specified beneficial results of loving kindness is that wherever one goes, one is loved by other human beings and one is loved by non-human beings. It's just sort of a natural result. Again, it's sort of Lobo Jamnian was thought it was the power of his mantra, but it was it's just that the quality of loving kindness, the quality of that heart that is willing to look on other beings without fear or suspicion or trying to get something, trying to gain something. It's just sort of, because when you're bringing the mind back to, bringing the heart back to a quality of loving kindness, one is, one can't really be selfish or it just is inimical to it. This is really, they don't go together. These are qualities that can be trained. One can bring them up into the mind. What we bring up into our minds over and over again is where the mind starts to go, where it starts what we become familiar with then becomes a sort of a well-worn pathway in the mind. And that's really ordinary. It's just like doing the spirit rock and there's well-worn pathways of our minds that can be really useful and beneficial, and there's well-worn pathways that, you know, are unbeneficial. It's like, and, you know, many of our well-worn pathways aren't so beneficial. It's like the they had a lot of signs up at Spirit Rock, sort of, you know, to prevent you from walking in certain areas for erosion control, because people had started been walking in certain ways, and then when the rains come, then it sort of washes away the path and sort of destroys the hillside. And you know, where sort of a well-worn pathway that creates unskillful qualities for ourselves is sort of like that. We erode our virtue, erode our peace, erode our happiness. Sort of, so, you know, cultivating mindfulness, meditation in different ways, cultivating loving kindness as sort of erosion control of our own goodness, you know, sort of preventing that. And then, you know, developing the things that are going to make us more comfortable, more happy. It's an ordinary, it's not something mystical, magical, or something that is beyond anybody's capacity. As you say, so saying, like, here's this little boy of 8 years old and 10 years old, and developing it and experiencing the fruits, experiencing the results. On a certain level, sometimes it's easier for, say, somebody like a child like that to pick it up and just do it, because there's, you know, we talk ourselves out of things so often, where we think too much, we know too much, we take in too many perspectives, and then end up talking ourselves out of doing things that are going to make ourselves happier or wiser or more compassionate, just because of you know, where we can find too many options for ourselves, or doubt, or we just start doubting, and then just don't do it. Right. So for Lopa Jamyan, he was just fortunate to have a grandfather who was really skillful and able to channel his energy in those ways. And I mean, he was relating to things that he was doing using this mantra, and to give him increased confidence in the cultivations of loving kindness and things like he had his grandfather, and in the end it was having him doing things like and his father as well, as he got a bit older, because his father was instrumental in beginning his training in meditation when he was five, but then his father was Ajahn Jamyan's mother died when she was six, or when he was six, and then his father just became completely unhinged at that point. Really, he went crazy, and it took some time, for years, for him to recover. But then, as he got older, then his father was also instrumental in helping him think. They were doing, his father took him one time to, because they're trying to get, like, giving him the opportunity to, like, to get over fear and to not limit himself to any situation, letting fear hold him back, I did things like having going into the ocean, and they're putting out like chicken's blood, and sort of sharks coming. And so they started learning how to swim with sharks around in the sea. So he grew up in the south of Thailand, very close to the ocean. And they had him swimming so that, and he said that it was very important to, when the sharks around, that to not do sort of full swimming strokes. You just, you're keeping your arms in close and using your feet, just sort of paddling a little bit, and so you're maneuvering around. And he said after a while he got really, it used to be kind of a lot of fun to be in the ocean with sharks around, and then using the mantra to keep again the sort of this feeling of having kindness and so that sense of, you know, in situations where one would possibly go towards. But, you know, that when we give ourselves the possibilities, you start realizing that we can do many, many things. And that, you know, as human beings, well, again, in a sense we limit ourselves. We just limit ourselves through our perceived sense of, we can't do it, or it's too difficult, or I don't have the time. When we set those limitations on ourselves, then of course we can. To really question the limitations that we place on ourselves. I mean, you know, one of the ways of allowing the mind to embrace more possibilities for ourselves is through that cultivation and establishing the heart in loving kindness, because one of its classical descriptions, loving kindness, compassion, sympathetic joy, equanimity, is they're called upamanya dhammas. They're dhammas which are qualities which are boundless, limitless. And when we set our intention on something that is not bounded, is not limited, then of course we open up a huge amount of possibilities for ourselves. And you see how much we limit ourselves, we bound ourselves in by fear, by worry, by anxiety, by doubt, and to say give ourselves the antidote, the opportunity to cultivate the antidote, which is, you say, turning to the qualities which are more boundless, and that the sense of, you know, loving kindness, and cultivating that sense of well-wishing, wishing oneself well, wishing others well, establishing that intention of recognition of wanting to establish oneself in happiness, and recognizing that all beings want to be happy, and to allow the mind to sort of stretch into that perception, to allow the heart to open into that those qualities, rather than shutting down, closing up, into, you know, fear, protection, self, kind of degradation, or doubts and or self-obsession in various ways. So to this opening up to all the different possibilities that can come through cultivating the qualities of kindness. And it has very practical benefits, practical results. It just makes life a whole lot easier when we live in a way that we create harmony amongst ourselves when we as human beings, when we live say respecting each other, willing to share, willing to give to each other, willing to support each other, because that quality of kindness is a kind of a glue that holds us together as human beings. And one can see the tremendous pain and difficulty that comes when aversion, suspicion, conflict, spitefulness, revenge, it just is create so much pain for ourselves, for others, for the world is sort of consumed by it. It's important to recognize that we do have the option to turn to something that is much more conducive to happiness and freedom. I mean, that's again another quality. When you turn attention to that which is more boundless, unlimited, then you're stepping into a quality of freedom. And that is, being stuck in a cage, stuck in a prison. Whether one's a human being or an animal, I mean, it's just as, nobody, no being wants to be imprisoned. No being wants to be, stuck in confinement. But we confine ourselves by our moods and thoughts and perceptions that are bound up in say negativity and ill will or fear. And it's just taking up the responsibility or the opportunity in directing attention and training oneself in those qualities which are their direct opposite, those qualities of loving kindness, qualities of well-wishing, qualities of compassion. So I'll offer that for reflection this evening. Mm-hmm.